Call the meeting of the Finance and Administration Committee to order. Review of the agenda. We should be using the agenda that's on your desk as opposed to one that's in your packet. There was one item added relative to the county clerk and the needs for funds for the elections. Anything on the agenda that needs to be moved around for any particular reason? Okay, we will move on to citizens' comments. Citizens wishing to speak, please stand up. State your name and address for the record, and your comments will be limited to approximately 5 minutes.
Thanks, Joe. My name's Mark Coggio. I live at 7835 36th Avenue. President of Local 7, which is Kern County, Kern County Highway Department. A lot of people know me as Mr. Congeniality.
Yes.
Sash on tonight. Bear with me. Right now, we are at a crossroads with our contract. We have hammered it out since last June with the county. We're a proud group, and we've tried to do our best. Right now, we've sent to Bob in the Personnel Committee, and hopefully you guys will get a little bit of this later, is the impact we gave. We gave a few things, a few more things. We'd really like to see something happen on this before we get to this deadline at the end of the month. We've tried to do our best. We tried to remain objective, and we're going to try to do that. And what we really appreciate from you supervisors that are here and Bob is the opportunity to kind of sit down and iron this thing finally out just so we make our deadline. It's really important to us to have some type of contract in place. And like I said, we've been working our head off, and all you have to do is read the paper. The NFL's doing it, the NBA's doing it, everybody's doing it. It's got to do with revenue, and it's got to do with what you think is fair. We just need something right now. What we think is fair would be a contract. We at least have something to say. Appreciate your time. You get a chance tonight. Hopefully the discussion will be about that. If you guys got any questions, my phone's in the book. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizens wishing to speak? Please state your name.
I'm here for number 16 on the agenda here.
Please state your name and address for the record. You will need to make your comments now. Typically, when we get to the agenda items, we do not have public interaction. So any comments that you would make, you should make at this time.
My name is Terry Nolan, and I live at 3910 83rd Street in Kenosha. And I'm an insurance broker here in town. We have a voluntary life insurance benefit before the county that's been before the county for a few years now. And looks like you're going to be talking about a policy tonight. And the program that we have is endorsed by the Wisconsin Counties Association. So we just want to make sure that Kenosha County is the dues-paying members of the Wisconsin Counties Association and the National Association of Counties. And this is a program sponsored and endorsed by the Wisconsin Counties Association. And we want to make sure that the benefits that have been endorsed by the Wisconsin Counties Association are allowed as part of your benefits in Kenosha County.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other citizens wishing to speak? Judge Will?
Yes, thank you. I don't know whether or not, just based on your comment, whether you're going to ask for comments later on when you consider the mortgage foreclosure mediation program, which is before you this evening. We've been working on that. The county, the judges of both Kenosha and Racine have been working on it with the cooperation of the Marquette University Law School. There are 14 programs like this around the state, so we're not inventing the wheel, but it's a program that would assist both borrowers and lenders to meet this mortgage foreclosure crisis that we're faced with. It provides an opportunity for the borrowers to get good information early on, independent of the court, and it provides for an opportunity for a mediation so that the lender and the borrower can meet, if they so choose, to try to find an alternate solution to a foreclosure. And the so I'm here to answer any questions with you, and Bob Riedel is been instrumental in assisting in the development of this, but I'd be here to answer any questions when you get to that item.
Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Rose.
Could we advance that item up to number 6A? Or?
Certainly. I was thinking the same thing. I'm sure the judge has very important things to do, and we will do that if there's no objection from the committee. Any other citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Reports from the chairman. I would like to welcome our youth and governance members, Paige and Amir. As I said to you prior to the meeting, I encourage you to be involved. I encourage you to ask questions. You're a part of this team. We value your input. And I would also like to thank Supervisor Gentz, who is their mentor. So thank you all. And I'll put you on the spot for a little bit. If you could, I think we're going to go around the table and introduce ourselves, but I'm going to ask you both to introduce yourselves to the committee. Amir?
All right. My name's Amir Kadri. I will be a senior at Trumper High School. I'm really looking forward to this. It's kind of like an insightful experience for me. And kind of looking forward to the year.
My name is Paige. I will be a senior at Trumper High School, and I'm also looking forward to everything that goes into Kenosha and how finance works with just every committee and just how this government itself in a county, like how it will represent our citizens, and just like really getting a familiarity of how it runs.
Good. My name is Bill Grady. I'm a local eye doctor, and I serve the 1st District of Kenosha County as a supervisor.
I'm Bob Riedel. I'm the Director of Personnel Services for Kenosha County.
I'm David Singer. I'm County Board Supervisor for the 15th District, which is going to become the 12th District next year.
John O'Day. I'm currently in the 14th District, which is just west of Tremper.
Terry Rhodes, 3rd District Supervisor.
I'm Dave Gertson, a Director of Finance and Administrative Services.
I'm Joe Clark. I'm the chairman of this committee, and I represent the 21st District in Pleasant Prairie. I just want to point out we have Dr. Grady, an eye doctor. We have Supervisor Singer, who is a financial services specialist. We have John O'Day, who is a realtor. We have Terry Rose, who is an attorney. I'm a CPA by trade. And we have, I won't introduce Mr. Supervisor Eckernes, but the one point that I said over and over on the county board, we have professionals and people from all walks of life on this county board, and it's that melting pot that we bring all our different experiences to the table, and that's why I think our form of government, we tend to get it right. So,
Fred Eckernes, I'm the vice chair of the county board, and I represent District 28, which is all of Bristol and a little bit of Salem.
Jeff Gentz, county board supervisor, 9th District, which is Tremper. So we've got some good South Side individuals here on our committee, so that makes me very proud. That's it.
Okay, that concludes my reports, reports from the committee. Supervisor Singer.
Yeah, I just want to give you, it's a preliminary thing on nepotism that we had talked about. It's just in initial stages, so I wanted you to look at it over, make any suggestions. I've given it to Bob Riedel to look over. If anybody else has any ideas on it, basically it's to form it closer to what the city has, the anti-nepotism. Right now all we have at the county is that you can't have your father be your supervisor. That's about it. So this way it tightened up the nepotism on the county. So.
Okay. Is it your plan then to bring it to the county board and have it referred, or would you just like me to have it on the next agenda of the Finance and Administration Committee?
It'd be nice to have it on the next agenda.
Okay. Al, you will make sure that's on the next agenda?
Sure will.
Okay.
I can take it.
Give me a copy of that. Any other reports from the committee? Seeing none, reports from the committee are closed. Number five, approval of minutes from the Finance Committee meeting on May 12th. It's moved by Supervisor Gentz, second by Supervisor Eckernis. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. And I'm just going to stop here. How do we want to handle youth and governance? Do you want to vote with us, or do we want to call on them separately? Any thoughts on that?
Just vote with us.
So you'll vote with us. We won't put you on the spot.
Yeah.
But if they say no, you got to let them talk. I'm just kidding.
You can talk it.
Okay.
Please.
We have the audit of the bills, which everybody has on their desk, a green packet for our union governance members. We typically review all expenditures over $5,000 as part of our audit and budget process, or our audit process and oversight. This committee reviews it, and it approves these bills. So with that, we will go on to item number 15. It is now approximately...
16,
am I looking at the correct agenda? What do we have?
No, it's the one on the table.
16. Item 16. And it's the amended agenda. Item 16.
And I told everybody to use that one, but I threw the wrong one.
Here's a whole new packet.
Let me just take
that. We got packets flying everywhere.
Too much paperwork.
Yeah. I didn't get a green thing, so I'm going to pout.
Okay, so it's 6:11. We're going to take item number 16, resolution to approve the establishment of a home foreclosure mediation program for Kenosha County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I will ask David Holman, supervisor, to present. You have already heard from Judge Wilk. Judge Wilk is the judicial energy behind the establishment of the program. And clearly Supervisor Holman is the county board energy behind the establishment of this program. With your permission, I'd like to ask David to introduce the staff.
It's way down at the bottom.
Supervisor.
It's this one.
Supervisor Holman.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for placing this item on your agenda tonight. The proposal is to create a foreclosure mediation program, which will allow folks who are in foreclosure, once they receive the summons and complaint from their lending institution, to pick up the phone, call one of our very able-bodied county staff members, and say, I would like to participate in voluntary mediation, which they would then pay a fee. The lending institution that has filed a summons and complaint would also pay a fee. The borrower would then sit down with a HUD-certified non-for-profit housing counselor who would look over their finances and make some recommendations as to whether or not it would potentially be feasible to remain in the home or to possibly look into other housing options. Then the person would move on to sit down with the representative from the lending institution, which would be the lender's counsel, someone who is legally able to make a contract, and see about trying to get the terms of their mortgage renegotiated. This is something that is very feasible for us to do. It doesn't take a lot of effort from us. It requires no levy dollars. And additionally, some of the secondary effects that the county experiences from foreclosure, aside from just the loss of property tax value, the cost to us in terms of maintaining those properties, the cost of liability in terms of things becoming a fire hazard because homes are not habitable, the crime issues that we have to deal with, not just necessarily in the city, but also in the western portion of our county, can be of great expense to us per house. It is estimated that a single foreclosure costs roughly $79,000.
Supervisor Singer.
First, I'd like to move the resolution.
Second.
The resolution was moved by Supervisor Singer, second by Supervisor Rose.
And I'd like to commend Supervisor Holman on his efforts on this, as well as everybody that worked with him on it. I think it's like a admirable program. And this article in the paper, by the way, and picture. If you were in my Kiwanis Club, we'd fine you for that, but that's fine. But I think we should go along with this. I think it's a good program. Anything to slow down people losing their homes, and if they can work out a way of keeping their home, even better. so I'll see this pass tonight.
Supervisor Gintz?
I was just looking. You mentioned fees. What fees would be associated with it?
Okay. The program will be managed out of my office, and the program coordinator is Laverne May. The fees that are associated is a non-refundable $25 application fee. As Supervisor Holman pointed out, and Judge Wilk, that if the application proves to be okay to enter into the program, there are four standards which must be met in order for the program to take effect for the applicant. Then the applicant is referred for counseling from a certified counselor. Assuming that that comes back okay, and the counselor believes that there is room for mediation, then the applicant will pay an additional $75, and the lender, the lender of the mortgage, will pay $100, and then we will convene the mediation session.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of other things here too, structurally, that I want to sort of make you aware of. The first is that we do know lately is that lending institutions have been turning down doing mortgage modifications for whatever reason. Their board of directors don't seem to like them. They would rather just take the home instead. So in some places, that has become an issue. There has been pushback on that from the attorney generals of all 50 states who have filed a lawsuit against the major lending institutions in this nation to try to combat that. That pushback has been fairly successful. Part of the other problem here, I guess, I'd say structurally, is also that if the mediation comes back that the person needs to have a better job, and we don't necessarily have that in our community, then there might be something we might want to take a look at in terms of our numbers, in terms of economic development and what's out there. That's just sort of a heads up.
Before I have another question.
Okay.
When you talk about the lender, is it going to be the lender that currently holds the mortgage? Or is it going to be a lender picked by us, or what do you, how?
It's the lender who holds the mortgage in general. In most cases, it will be the counsel for the lender who holds the mortgage. Okay. Will actually participate in the mediation.
Okay. And do we have those, I mean, have we talked to them about this program?
They're well aware this is going on in a number of other counties throughout the state. Okay. Some are being administered by the county. I think the two are. Others are being done by nonprofits. In the San Kenosha area, we don't really have a nonprofit that actually does this kind of work. They do small pieces of it, but they don't actually do the full-blown mediation. So this is something that we can just
take okay. care
of. The county board establishes the program. You know, gives it a budget and on all that it needs to function. Then we will contact lenders. And in fact, Laverne has a list. She's prepared to send letters to make them know that this is available.
I mean that's the logical way for it to go, but what if somebody has a mortgage with a lender that we haven't talked to or doesn't agree? How can we maybe work that out?
They'll identify the letter on their application and we'll find.
Okay. All right. I'm done. Thank you.
What's been the success of this in these other counties?
In the other counties, it's been considerably well. 30, 40%, 50%. For those who decide to opt into the program because it is voluntary,
right.
There's a very, very high success rate, particularly when you have a judge at the end of the pipeline.
And I think assuming this passes the board, I think we should have some reports back on this. I would like very much to know its success, who's participating, what lenders are not, why not. I think we need to know those kinds of facts.
There's a tracking mechanism within the computer setup that we have. There's also a website, by the way, that you should all go see as soon as it's activated on July 1st. That explains all of that. But we will be tracking that. And we'll be happy to come back for early, biannual, whatever you want.
I share the concern of Supervisor Rose. In fact, the spreadsheet that you have in front of you for those of you who are
Yep, we have it.
Mr. Chairman, you have a copy of the sheet?
Yes.
I specifically prepared it for you.
Nice spreadsheet.
Thank you. gives you the foreclosure filings in circuit court for Kenosha County going all the way back to the year 2000. As you can see in that last column on the far right, there has been a considerable increase over the years. The number that you see for this current month is updated through this afternoon as of about 3:30. I would have liked to have disaggregated the data, Supervisor Rose, by lending institution, but it just seemed to be a tedious amount of work that my time might have been spent better doing something else.
Just a comment, basically, that there's been a lot of scams out there, and these fees seem to be reasonable compared to some of those that have been anywhere from $400 to people have been up to $2,000 thinking that they're going to get some relief from their mortgages, and it just flies away. This has some controls. It has a system already in place. It probably will work a lot better, and if it has some continuity being a county kind of thing, it would be better for everybody.
Mediators are volunteers. Volunteers, attorneys primarily. We have met with two. We will probably have three. The HUD counselors also counsel at no charge to the applicant. And so the $200 is strictly for our administrative fees and supplies.
That's good. Who are the mediators?
One is Mr. William Frank from Racine, and his law firm is located in Chicago. And I'm meeting with the second one next week, and until I lock him in, I'm not going to tell you who that is. I understand he's a local attorney.
Just so we run an orderly meeting, I just ask that you be recognized by the chair. I've been trying to get Mr. Supervisor Grady, who's been waiting patiently.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question or two through the chair to Supervisor Holman. Do we have counties right in our same geographic area that are participating in this program that have something? Just elaborate a little bit on that.
Two, yes and no. I mean, Milwaukee County obviously has a very successful program that's being administered by Marquette. Racine and Kenosha essentially have nothing until we decided to act or are deciding to act. Outside of that, I know Iowa County has one that they're operating by their county, instituted by Judge Dyke, who had the first one in the state of Wisconsin. Much of this is modeled off of a program that comes from Philadelphia, which has been exceptionally successful. So, yes and no to answer your question.
Well, good. Just a comment then on the recommendation. Comment is, you know, I think it's a advisable thing to do. It seems like, you know, as Judge Willis said, we're not reinventing the wheel, but we're doing something that will be positive for all of us.
That folks says the really good stuff.
So, if he says it's good, we're going to fly into it. But just to take a look at the potential for averting a crisis before it becomes a crisis, I think it's a positive thing. We should be in favor of that. I'll draw your attention, though, to page 202 on the resolution as it's worded. And we're looking at the bottom of the page, and I think the FAQs are tremendously helpful information to supervisors. Who must attend the mediation session? And the answer to Supervisor O'Day's help, maybe as you kind of go through this, but my limited knowledge of financial transactions with real estate, you went up with a set of documents. There's an offer to purchase that starts out, and that's a document of a certain type. We look at the bottom paragraph, who must attend the mediated session. You have warranty deeds and titles where usually the homeowners and the financial institution are listed both on that document. And then you have the lien holders, which are actually the financial end of the arrangement where the terms of the bank notice go. So I'm just thinking, in order to make this complete so that no one's left out, it may be advisable in some fashion to reword this to say the mediation session must be attended in person by all homeowners, slash, and again, I'm going to refer to Supervisor O'Day because he has more knowledge here than I do, slash lien holders, slash interested parties, others. We don't want to get to a situation where someone was left out of this and then we can't construct a viable scenario here. So it's just my recommendation. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
Pages that you referenced, those aren't part of the resolution. That's information on the program question and answer. Is that correct, Supervisor?
Yes.
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 And typically there could be several lien holders, but there's primarily one lien holder who is pushing the foreclosure action, and that's who is making the filings in court, or that's the person who's pushing the issue. That's really the one I believe you need at the table.
Yes and no. To a certain degree, you do need to have some conversation with the servicer. One of the problems that we have in the state of Wisconsin is that our Department of Financial Institutions at the state level, which is responsible for licensing and keeping a registry of various types of financial entities, does not cover mortgage servicers. So you could be a lending institution, and you could call Billy Bob's servicer and say, hey, I've got a contract with you. You need to foreclose on this person. And they start foreclosing. And the person you're foreclosing on calls you, the bank, saying, will you work with me? Will you work with me? Will you work with me? Sure, sure, sure. But you never call Billy Bob to say, hey, stop foreclosing on this person. I'm working with them. And so that's the situation that people are in when they end up in the judge's court. This prevents that. So there is the need to have a conversation with the servicer, should there be a servicer involved.
Any other questions? Just a question, does the is this the court system involvement, is this something that a judge may recommend or they can order?
No, the judges of Kenosha and Racine have all endorsed this by resolution. And what will happen is when someone files the paperwork, the summons and complaint at the clerk of court's office, they withdraw a number of copies to serve on the defendant. And so along with those papers that are withdrawn, there'll be the sheet which contains all the information of what the borrower can do if the borrower wants to. I want to stress that this is a volunteer effort in terms of the procedure. That is, the borrower has the voluntary right to go forward and try to do something. In court, almost every case where someone appears, a defendant appears, or a borrower appears, they say, I've been sending this stuff off to ABC and I get nothing. They keep asking me to send it again and again. I wish I had somebody I could talk to. This gives them, in a sheet, the ability to voluntarily use some initiative and try to get them if you need it and try to get that process. The courts are not involved specifically in recommending it now, that is, once it's in place, that is, it'll be just information that goes to the borrower when he or she or they are served with the summons and complaint. And that's up to them to use their initiative to seek an application in order to plug themselves into that. And if it comes to court, when it comes to court, we're not involved. The courts aren't involved specifically in knowing how that turned out or didn't turn out, unless whatever they do through mediation results in a resolution of the litigation that would normally come to the court. Is that helpful?
Yes, and then is it the clerk of court then, when the filings are made with the clerk of court, or how does the service of process, or how do they know to put this document in the packet?
Because we've had the clerk of courts involved, both clerks of courts involved with our planning and the process, and they're now committed to through resolution, because the courts and the judges in Kenosha passed a resolution requiring that any summons and complaint comes in for a foreclosure, that this sheet be attached and go back out for service with that. So the clerk has agreed to do that. The clerk of courts has agreed to ensure that is being done.
Any other questions on the process? Supervisor Holmes?
If I could, Mr. Chairman. I believe there is one judge in the state of Wisconsin who did make it mandatory by court rule saying that this is what we're going to do. I'm told by our judges here that that's not exactly part of our law books in the state of Wisconsin, but that's what he decided to do, and of course it was popular, so nobody necessarily fought him on it. But I think there is the need to communicate to our judicial branch and the Supreme Court to say that maybe we might want to make something like this mandatory or at least have something called loss mitigation, which standardizes the forms that are going through the various courts from all 50 states, make that part of the Attorney General's suit. So those will be some things at board side in terms of communicating to the state that we might want to really take a look at doing, in addition to asking the DFI to make a registry of mortgage services.
I just want to focus on that last be it further resolved, and perhaps Dave, you can just look at that wording. The administration is hereby authorized to modify the budget for the mediation service program, and I've got this, as long as no levy funds are expended. In this resolution, we're modifying the budget.
Right.
And so I think the wording should be that we're modifying the budget however we normally do that, and maybe noting that no levy funds, because this is a budget modification at this point in time.
Okay.
So how would you?
Well, the levy, the modification, you're right, which is attached and it's incorporated and it's part of the resolution, shows $29,000 of expense and $29,000 of revenue with no levy. So it shows that. This language puts a condition on it that there will be at no time any levy funds expended, so the words accomplish that. So with the two items coupled, it achieves the objective you're talking about.
Okay. I want to thank you, Supervisor Hallman. I don't want to say one of the few times, but it's one of the few times that you see a supervisor addressing a problem, seeing a problem, and doing something about it. So thank you for all your efforts. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It is 6:32. We're going on to item number 7, finance resolution providing for the sale of not to exceed $2,810,000 general obligation county building bonds. Dave.
Okay. For the committee, chairman requested that I give a very brief overview of the bond process. So. Starts with the budget. We adopt a capital budget by state law, with some rare exceptions. The issuance of debt can only be done legally for the purpose of funding capital projects. So, budget, you approve the capital budget. Coupled with that, then you approve the author, or you approve the issuance of the bonds to fund the capital projects. Those are generally done the night of budget adoption, and that. Resolution that you adopt authorizing the issuance of the debt requires a three-quarter resolution. After that, when we examine the market and determine when it would be best to issue the debt from cash flow standpoint and other parameters that we'll talk about, we issue a set sale resolution where you authorize the selling of the bonds. And you authorize some elements related to the structure of the bonds and some general parameters on the date that we'll sell the debt, which that is what we're doing tonight. So that's the piece we're doing tonight. Then we, after you authorize that, we sell the bonds. We do them through, we take bids. If we don't do private placement. Generally, there are rare instances we do private placement, but most of the time we take bids and get the best rate we can get, the best rate that the marketplace offers. So that we will do, we're looking at July 20th for selling the bond. So that's, I was watching the clock, about 60-second overview. Did it pretty quickly, just a nutshell, unless there's other questions that you have about that.
So for the youth and governance, this is a continuation of a process that started in our budget, and we are now at the point where we're going to take our bonds out to the market and sell them, and we are authorizing the administration to do that.
Right.
So that's where we are in the process. So is this time for Mr. Harrigan? Is that
we have Mr. Harrigan on video conference with us, and you can turn the floor over to Mike, and Mike can make your report.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And good to see the committee. I can see about two-thirds of the committee, but I know you're all there. The report that I'm going to be making tonight is one that is hopefully you all have a copy of. It's dated June 8th, and I'm going to refer to it. But the document itself is laid out in a format that should be probably fairly familiar to most of the committee members. What we've got here is on the first page after my cover letter, I have identified the various borrowings that are contemplated, not just for this year, but that are part of the capital plan, of course, which will be subject to annual review through 2015. Today, we're talking exclusively about the two proposed issues on the far left side for 2011. There's an indication for a note issue and a bond issue. The difference between a note and a bond is primarily the length of time that you're going to be using to pay for it. Under Wisconsin statutes, notes can be issued for a period of up to 10 years, and there's a little more flexibility with the use of the funds. But the county has had a past practice of wanting to fund its capital, ongoing capital projects, the type of projects that would be typically repeated for maintenance and upkeep from year to year within a 10-year period. Or less. And so the notes reflect that. We've got the various purposes here. These are all things that were a part of the budget deliberations for the county this past fall. And as Dave Gertsen mentioned, you had adopted initial resolutions by a three-quarter vote of the county board to authorize this as part of your budget planning. The bond issue is for a building project, the courthouse Molinaro building restoration, and that is expected to be carried out over a 20-year period. So we have $10,030,000 in notes and $2,810,000 in bonds. As I said, we always do our planning with the county in the context of your overall capital financing plan over at least a 5 to 10 year period. So we have the future radar screen items identified here on this page. If you turn to the next page, we have identified the structure of all of these proposed issues and others even beyond this time frame. The next two pages are really one long spreadsheet. I won't spend a ton of time with this, but I'll just walk you through from left to right on the spreadsheet. On the very far left of this page three is a column that aggregates all of the existing principal and interest on the county's debt going forward. This is the debt that you already have on your books. So that's the principal and interest payment that is due each year for that pre-existing debt. The two issues that are proposed are the ones highlighted in this spreadsheet on the left. Again, the note issue and the bond issue. Now you can see the specific amortization that's contemplated for the issue. There are the two issues that are proposed. And then future issues out through 2016 on this page. If you turn to the next page, we also include additional placeholder borrowings for the annual ongoing capital maintenance items all the way out through 2020. And those are contemplated to be 10-year note issues as well. There are a few columns of revenue offsets here. These numbers, starting with the column IRS rebate. You may recall that you had used the Build America Bond program. This was the program that was authorized by the stimulus legislation that provides for a rebate of interest from the federal government. And so we have that interest rebate shown in this column. We have other funds that were available through your debt service funds and a premium bid from a prior year bond issue to offset the amount that would otherwise be required to be levied on your tax roll. If we add up all the columns to the left, including the prior page, we get to the total proposed levy for debt column, and that's what's in the highlighted blue. In order to identify what the impact will be on your taxpayer, we try to translate that into a tax rate per thousand. To do that, we have to identify what your tax base is and is projected to be going forward. This can be a tricky part because, of course, as we all know, tax base across the country, and especially even in Wisconsin, has experienced changes that we haven't seen in some time. More specifically, the tax base has actually gone down in many cases rather than having increased. What we are showing here is we've adjusted our model to assume zero growth in your tax base for 2012. 1.5% for 13, 2% for 14, and then gradual growth thereafter. By dividing the levy by the tax base, you end up with a tax rate per thousand, and you can see that we range up to, in this model, about $1.12 during the period of borrowing through 2016. Now, of course, that can mitigate in either direction, again, depending upon the fluctuation of your valuations. I may pause there and just see if there are any questions before I go to the last page of this document. Anybody have any questions so far?
The only question I have is, you have estimates in interest at 5% and 5.75% for these 2011 issues. What have you been seeing happening lately?
Right now, those numbers are still quite comfortable in the sense that we are seeing interest rates on 20-year paper in the just above the 4% range, Mr. Chairman.
That program's unlimited.
And so, in fact, I'm just going to skip ahead just a little bit. If you take a look at the last page of this document, I have included a interest rate graph here, and you're used to looking at this, but this is an interest rate graph in depicting what the interest rate is on the 20-year coupon for a municipal bond on a national average. What you'll see is that we've had quite a bit of fluctuation over the past year. If you look at the low point on this graph, you'll see that mark from October 18th of 2010, that was the low point, and the 20-year coupon rate was 3.82% at that time. I might mention that that's not only the low point for this past year, but that is also the low point for the last 35 years. Mm-hmm. So it's a very significant point. Now, there was quite a bit of movement upward from there over the course of the next several months, but as you can see, we've seen a tailing off to the point where we are now under the average for the year again. So one of the thoughts, and the county has had a practice over the past several years of borrowing its funds in the second half of the calendar year. You've actually done it a little later than what we're talking about right now, but given the current interest rate environment, we thought that it would be useful, and I know that Mr. Gertsen thought it would be useful for us to consider accelerating a little bit that to take advantage of where things are and are projected to be in the shorter term.
Sure. Supervisor Gintz.
Move to approve.
Second. It's been been moved by Supervisor Dent, second by Supervisor Eckernest to approve. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Move to approve A, too. Tied together.
We are on item 8, finance resolution providing for the sale of not to exceed $10,030,000 general obligation promissory notes.
A second.
It is 6:45. It has been moved by Supervisor Gentz, seconded by Supervisor Eckernest. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. Thank you.
I'll distribute both resolutions together. That's all.
Sure.
Are there three documents?
There should be three documents.
Yes. I'm sorry. Let me grab the. Sorry. Three documents or three signature sheets?
Three signature sheets.
Okay.
Okay.
I only see one.
So the resolutions will be coming around. We are on to item number 9 on our agenda. It is 6:45. Purchasing report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm
signing off. Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Purchasing report on P-card/electronic funds transfers. We instituted this new program. Ms. O'Neill?
Yes, I have copies of my report here. I apologize for not getting them in your packet sometime.
You can introduce yourself to the staff.
I'm Carol O'Neill. I'm a purchasing representative for Trevor Students. And you know my son, Jason O'Neill. Oh, yeah.
That's a good South Sider.
I also wanted to, South Sider. Southern Prairie. I would also like to apologize for missing last month's meeting when I was sick. I'm here tonight at your request to provide an update on both the procurement card system that was approved by the board late last year and the electronic payment of invoices program we began implementing at that same time. These two programs are interrelated and are decreasing our expenses for the payment of invoices by changing the way we pay for our goods and our services. The same team members that are involved in the implementation of both programs, so we concentrated on first implementing the electronic payment of invoices, or EFT, or electronic funds transfer. So for the status of that program, a recent upgrade in Kenosha County's J.D. Edwards software has allowed accounts payable staff to offer this electronic payment option to more vendors and contractors. The county has processed our payroll checks like this for many years, but with the electronic payments to vendors, we had no way to send them the remittance advice, so they couldn't connect the payment with what we were being asked to pay. We didn't have any way to send the bill with the check. The check would hit their, or the payment would hit their bank account, and they wouldn't necessarily be able to connect it with a particular invoice. So with the upgrade of the new J.D. Edwards system, we now can send an email automatically as soon as we create the EFT payment. An email is automatically generated to the vendor so that they connect it to the payment, and it allows them to know exactly what we're paying. It has greatly improved the efficiency of the whole system, and we're expanding it a lot further. Electronic payment is more secure, it's efficient, more efficient than paying by paper check. Not only does the county save on printing and postage and handling, but our account clerks now spend a lot less time responding to vendor inquiries regarding payment status or missing or lost checks. We've also reduced the number of lost checks that we have, which creates bank fees. Electronic payment improves vendor relationships, it curbs the risk of fraud, eliminates the possibility of check tampering and lost checks. Efforts are now being made to switch from paper check processing to EFT wherever possible. Kenosha County processes approximately 30,000 paper checks annually out of our accounts payable system. Approximately 25% of those checks are for one-time payments and would not be practical for electronic payment processing. However, 45% of those checks are issued on a monthly basis and would be good candidates for electronic payments. Therefore, it is possible to eliminate close to half of the paper checks now being processed, and we are actively pursuing that. Expansion of electronic payments is currently in the pilot phase. The Human Services Department has converted 16 of its most frequently paid vendors to electronic payments in the past 6 weeks. There are more to follow. The Sheriff's Department has just begun to contact their vendors about conversion. We've trained them in the process to make a request and to issue that back to us. Despite some technical snags that we encountered, we had some snags with the email process at one point. That's all been corrected, and we're going to move countywide to expand this in August. The rate at which paper checks are converted to electronic payments is dependent on the responsiveness of the vendor, so we have to wait for them to get back to us once we approach them. So far, most have been anxious to convert. They like this. It's less time-consuming for them, and they get paid a lot faster. Progress on the project will be monitored, and we will report on it periodically. For the procurement card program, while implementing the EFT program, we've also been working closely with the procurement cards. This has involved writing our procedures, installing, configuring the J.D. Edwards software module that supports P-cards, configuring the card company's web-based program with our information, and then setting up our SharePoint site where our procedures will be accessible to all cardholders. I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with SharePoint, but we have a web-based program where we can have all of our procedures or any other documents that we want people to access throughout the county. So we don't have to send out paper copies of this, and it's all centrally located. When researching the use of P-cards, we made the decision to use the J.D. Edwards P-card module because it allows us to automatically download every purchase directly into the general ledger. There's much less manual interaction with having to get the information from the bank and keying everything into our system. It will be an automatic download on a weekly basis. The information provided by merchants is provided on three different levels. The lowest level is very basic information where it will just say, for example, groceries, $43.59. Then we have level two where it gives a little bit more information. It'll say groceries, but it'll also show, if we had to pay tax, it would show that, but it will show that we're exempt. It gives a customer code, a PO number, an invoice number, and the merchant ID number. The level three information, which is what we want to get from as many of our vendors as possible, provides much more detailed information. And by the example that I put in the report, your groceries are now broken down to 4 pounds of Angus steak and 5 pounds of russet potatoes and a gallon of milk. So it'll show exactly what you bought, and that'll all be downloaded directly into J.D. Edwards. We don't get that kind of detail right now when people are manually entering invoices for payment. So this is going to give us a lot more information, and we'll be able to report much more on what we're purchasing. The merchants are charged per transaction by the card companies based on the level of information they provide. So it's more expensive for the merchant to provide level three data than it is for them to provide level one. So our smaller vendors, especially the smaller mom and pop shops, do not provide level three data. They at the most will provide level two, and quite frequently only level one. All levels of information are going to be directly downloaded on a weekly basis. After the data is downloaded, the department's account clerk will access the data and apply the appropriate budget account number to each charge. The cardholder is required to submit all receipts to the clerk by Thursday of each week, and the clerk verifies the receipt data once the download. We've got pre-printed envelopes that they will be keeping their receipts in, and they have all the data for that week's transactions. They will keep that in their department, and it's all subject to audit. They have to have a receipt for every transaction. The account clerk is also responsible for reporting any suspected irregularities to the appropriate county authority. After the charges are quoted, the department head or their designee reviews the purchase for compliance with policy, and then will post the batch in J.D. Edwards. During the J.D. Edwards setup, we discovered a programming glitch that would not allow us to split a transaction between funds. We've worked with J.D. Edwards to resolve that, and they recently let us know that they've written new code to fix the problem. And we haven't received the new code yet, but we're supposed to get it shortly, and that'll fix that problem. Each card also involves a setup in the card company's online program. It's a web-based program that provides the card security and the purchase limitations assigned to each user. We can change limits in real time. We can immediately cancel a card. We can do anything that we need to do with the card. Only the program administrators will have access to that program. Because it's web-based, we can access it from any secure computer. So if somebody's making a transaction on a weekend and they're having a problem, they can get a hold of either one of our program administrators, and we can check online and figure out what the problem is. If they lose a card, they have the ability to call the company themselves and cancel the card immediately. Or if there is an issue that we suspect, and even if it's outside of county time, I can go online and have that card canceled immediately. We did set up two different SharePoint sites, one to be used by program administrators that'll have all their confidential card information. The other one is just going to be used for the card holders and contain information that they need. It will have county contracts on it that they will have the ability to purchase off of. Use of the cards is going to be strictly monitored. We've set up an audit procedure so that potentially every purchase is subject to an audit. Like the EFT program, the P-card program is going to cut our expenses in paying our vendors. The vendors are paid at the time of purchase by the card company, and that is their incentive for them to participate in this program, for them to accept our card. Because there's a cost to them on the end of the card company, being paid faster is more helpful to them instead of waiting 30 days. The county pays the card company once a month, so as opposed to paying many vendors multiple times throughout the month, we make one payment to the card company. As we expand the EFT and P-card programs, it's going to eliminate hundreds of small payments that cost the county approximately 49 cents each to process. I would like to come back after we have more experience with both of the programs under our belt and report again probably at the end of the year.
Supervisor Singer?
I just want to, who's the card company?
J.P. Morgan Chase.
And Edwards is the software.
That's our financial software. County's financial software.
Mr. Supervisor Chairman, Gans. I'll move to receive and file the report.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor. We had one of our.
Discussion.
It's been moved by Supervisor Gans, second by Supervisor O'Day. Any discussion?
Question is, it looks on paper, you know, very good in terms of efficiency, documentation, all the things you desire. As with most things, though, there could be some, I suppose, potential for a negative side or downside. Is there anything you could care to mentioned that you observed personally, or the vendor would say, this is a potential thing to be aware of?
Yes, it is a credit card, and just like with all credit cards, you do have a potential for fraud, like online fraud. Users have to be very vigilant about where they're using the cards. They have to protect their cards. They have to keep that card safe like they keep their own card safe. So it has the same risk as your credit card in your wallet right now.
My question,
thank you. Just to expand on that, how many cards have you got out now?
We don't have any cards out right at this moment. We haven't made any purchases on the cards yet.
Okay.
But with our pilot program, we're going to have about 7 or 8 cards that county employees have. I will hold a card for every department so that if they need to make a purchase and we can't make it by any other way other than credit card, I will have a card for that department. It's very difficult right now for any county employee to go out and if that travels and rent a hotel room. You can't rent a hotel room anymore without a credit card. It's very difficult.
Thank Supervisor you. Singer.
Do we have policy as far as the employees themselves?
It's attached to the report.
You have in every department or every division a clerk responsible for this? Is that?
Every division that will hold a card will have a clerk that is responsible for collecting the receipts and inputting all the account data into J.D. Edwards. The information coming in from the bank will automatically be downloaded. And then the department or division head or whoever they designate will be the approver. So there will actually be someone who inputs the data and then someone who, with oversight to approve what was entered and that the policy was followed.
And that happens on, I saw, a weekly basis.
Yes.
So in the event that there was a fraudulent transaction, the county would be aware of that relatively quickly.
Yes. That's why we want to do it weekly.
And then the vendors, they send us the receipts electronically as well? Is that what I...
No, if when you're making a purchase with a credit card, you will be handed the receipt. If you're making a purchase online, it will give you the receipt online and you print it off.
Okay. And then that clerk, once they've approved and it's been verified and it's been approved by the department, he had those receipts then go to...
The receipts are put in the receipt file, and the department keeps it for the potential audit.
Do we currently scan our invoices into the system?
No, but we have a project, if you remember. We approved a project in the 20... I think this year's budget, to do a scanning program. And we're working our way through that, and AP is one of the things we're looking at.
So at some point, we're going to, even these receipts
right.
are going to be online
right.
attached
right.
to the...
That's the idea.
This is
right.
an interim solution until that's up and running.
Okay. Any other discussion?
The procedures are in draft form right now.
It's because we're not through the pilot phase yet. We still
after you complete them, will that be coming back to us?
If you would like.
Sure. And we'll put them on the website.
Right.
You can look at them on the website.
So as for our calendar, that will probably be the December, which I don't know if we have a December meeting or January.
January.
Good.
Okay. Al, you have it? Okay. Any other discussion? It's been moved to receive and file a report. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Okay, we're moving on to item number 10. It is 701 from the Sheriff's Department, resolution for fiscal year 11, Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance, MABAS base station radio grant.
Mr. Chairman, just the committee members, I advance under the Sheriff's Department, Division of Emergency Management. We have been awarded a grant from the Office of Justice Assistance in the total amount of $20,000 with a 15% match for the Sheriff's Department for a Mavis base station, which is a mutual aid box alarm system base station radio. Mavis is the radio frequency that is used by all of the fire departments in this area for mutual aid calls. And the reason it's important for us to have this is because January 1st, 2013, all radios have to be narrow-banded, and this particular base station is not able to be narrow-banded, so it will become obsolete. So either way, the Sheriff's Department needs to purchase this radio in order to keep the county fire departments, all the fire departments, able to communicate with each other for mutual aid. We were the first county in Wisconsin to go to Mavis. It's north from Illinois. It's now currently up into the middle of the state and moving west, and it's a very successful program for the fire departments. So at this point, I guess it's necessary for us to replace this base station.
Supervisor Singer.
I move the resolution.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Singer, second by Supervisor Eckernes. Any discussion on the resolution? Supervisor O'Day.
The match, where's that coming from?
Sheriff's
Department. Okay. Out of what?
I don't know.
Okay. In the budget
Petty
model.
Cash.
Operating supply, equipment, and operating supply.
They're taking it within their current budget. They're reducing their expenses.
Okay.
It's no levy impact or general fund impact. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you very much.
That was a quickie.
Okay, we're going to move on to item number 11. It is 704. Parks resolution to approve the acceptance of the grant funding for the purpose of funding the Fox River Fish Passage Dam Removal Design and Engineering.
Hi, I'm John Ruby, the General Manager of the Grosse County Parks Division.
What we're asking here for is acceptance for that grant from the Greater Milwaukee Foundation for Lake Michigan. What this is, it's a grant for the design and engineering of the dam removal at Betts, a bridge to replace where it sits, and the stream bank and stream bed restoration in that site. A little history, that dam was put in the mid-30s as an impoundment structure for irrigation water for the Betts golf course. In 1976, the golf division dug their own lake or pond up on the Betts golf course, and the use of that lagoon down in the park was no longer needed. In the last probably 3 decades, the flooding incidents in Petrifying Springs Park have increased, and after engineers have taken a look at this, they've realized that with the dam removed, we would significantly reduce the flooding incidents. When that park floods, it washes out the playground servicing on 2 playgrounds. It floods out 2 pavilions and washes out quite a bit of our trails. All that servicing material goes into the Pike River or out onto the lawn areas, as well as mud and debris from the river. It takes our crew, our whole crew at Betts, between 3 and 5 days to clean up the mess afterwards. It closes the park. We have to cancel pavilion reservations. So economically, it does impact us. The grant is in the total of $132,000, or the project total, I'm sorry. $102,000 is the grant award, with $30,000 being Kenosha County's share. $28,000 of that will be paid through a budget modification out of the Parkland Development Fund, and the other $2,000 we're able to match in kind with either volunteer work or county staff work.
Supervisor Singer.
I just want to ask a question to John.
Okay.
Has the impact on property owners downstream been established, or is there any impact that's we're aware of that it's going to affect other people? Obviously, we've got problems right now, and I mean, it's a good idea that we not have the problem so that it doesn't cost us continually money to do that, but are we pushing the problem on someone else? That's all I know.
I think the banks are high enough. I don't think anybody else is experiencing the flooding that we are. I mean, the river is contained in the banks. The dam that caused problems prior to this also was at the Kenosha Country Club, which was there for the same reason, for irrigation water, but they came up with something else on their own down there, and that dam was removed in 2004. And this is seen as the last impediment to fish migration and things in the Pike River. And this is also linked with $180,000 that the Wind Pike Initiative also received to begin restoration of the Pike River north of us.
And I'd like to move the
second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Singer, second by Supervisor Gintz to approve. Any other discussion or questions? Supervisor Graney.
That is, I've said on the Highway and Parks Committee for a number of years, and this has long been a sore spot in addition to the economic problems that cause the pets, but just for the health of the ecosystem, instead of having a dam which necessarily causes silt, buildup, accumulation, any number of things, now you have at least potentially, if it passes and goes through, a free-flowing waterway where the fish can migrate farther. It's better all around, the environment's better for us economically. We're just darn lucky we have an entity, this Greater Milwaukee Fund for Lake Michigan, stepping up and to help us out. So we're really blessed. I'd like to thank Mr. Rudy for coming forward organizing this.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I just want to question this Parkland Development Fund. Is that money we budget every year, or is there a specific fund that's set up and we have money set aside for that?
Yes, there is, and I can let the budget director
talk more about that. That's the Park Development Fund that we use for, that we received the $250,000 from Kingston.
Okay.
We can use it for any park development.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Resolution carries. Okay, item number 13, it is 709, Human Services, Brookside 2000.
We got 12, right?
12, oh, moving ahead of myself, sorry. Item number 12. It is 709. Parks, resolution to apply for grant funding for the purposes of building a recreational trail on the abandoned Chicago and Consumers Ice Railroad bed and through the Silver Lake Marsh to connect the village of Silver Lake with Silver Lake County Park.
Yes, and that's, this is just a resolution to apply for the grant. And the top it says accept the grant funding, but that's not true. This is just to apply for the grant. I think I have the wrong one. This trail runs from the DNR boat launch just outside of Silver Lake on County Highway B. And that port is sort of a Y shape. That portion from the boat launch follows the Silver Lake shoreline all the way around to would be the west side of Silver Lake County Park. And then the other part of the fork would come back and come out to Highway B right across from the Silver Lake Industrial Park. And what we're proposing to do is there will require two bridges in there to bridge the gaps that were cut into the old railroad bed. It is on DNR property, and we would have to enter into an easement with them, which would be a long-term easement to build the trail. Again, that's probably going to be one of the most scenic trails in Kenosha County. Right now, the trail project cost is probably right around $302,433. We are going to submit for a stewardship and also recreational trail grants. Worst case scenario would probably be a 50-50 match, which the county share would be $151,216.
Any questions or discussion?
Approval. Second.
Moved by Supervisor Eckner, second by Supervisor Gentz. My concern is we're committing to a $151,000 match. Where's that match coming from?
That would have to be budgeted. Again, we're asking to submit the grant, not the
to apply for it.
So it is, as we had with previous grant applications, I'm not committed by allowing us to, or voting to apply for the grant, I'm not committed to supporting using levy dollars to do a project like this. So I will support this to make the application, but depending on our finances and our financial situation, that doesn't equal a commitment to levy for this project on my part. Mm-hmm. Any other discussion?
Just to clarify that, that was vetted the same way at the Highway and Parks Committee, and that was the same concern, but it didn't pass after the discussion.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. Okay. Item 13, it is 713, Human Services, Brookside, 2010 year-end report, 2011 report, Human Services quarterly report as of March 2011.
Which one would you like to
do? Why don't you take the year-end? Please introduce yourself for the benefit of our youth and governance.
I'm Laurie Staves. I'm the Fiscal Director for Human Services. You have two separate documents. This one, I guess I'll be reviewing first, because the draft and the report. We were asked to come back and show where last year in 2010 we were seeing the deficit grow. And this information, if you look on the graphs, the second page, The first, the top graph, the blue area has the private pay budget was 46, and as you can see, it dropped drastically.
Our budget is black and white.
Oh.
Or our,
you got the only original.
Oh,
rule.
Just say top or bottom.
Yeah. Top line.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I thought I was losing that, too. I didn't see blue anywhere.
The top line is the private pay census throughout from January through December. This is all last year. And you can see towards the end is when we dropped off drastically. The bottom line is the Medicare budget, which we had budgeted 25 last year. And you can see then, again, at the end of the year, the last quarter, where it had dropped significantly, but then came back up a little bit in December. The bottom graph, the top line, is our personnel budget over, or personnel costs over and under budget. So anything above that zero line or the dollar that has the dash to it is savings, and anything under, we're going under budget. So the bottom line shows the month-end deficits that were coming up. And what I did was kind of show on the wording, when I was here in September to give our annual or year-end estimate for DHS, for Human Services, we had June financials. And with the June information, we were expecting to break even at that point. So what I'm attempting to do is explain that it all hit towards that last quarter, October, November, and December starting. So I don't want to go through every month. I think what we wanted to attempt is that it wasn't started from the first of the year and in depth, that it was towards that last year.
So, briefly, we had a deficit last year because?
It's our private pay. We had budgeted 46 for private pay, and you can see that we're ending below 30 at the end of the year. That's 16 a day that was not private pay, and then we were made up with Medicaid. But our Medicaid patients, we actually have to supplement. We lose money on that. So private pay is where we dropped off.
Supervisor Rose?
Well, you know, if you look at your private pay, though, I think the warning signs were there because you started out the year with 42, not 46. February, again, you had 42, 45 in March, and then it dipped down to 39. And it never returned to 40 again. So in my opinion, I would disagree with what you said, that we didn't know about this until the final quarter. Strikes me that you knew about this in January. The second thing is that how would you deal with this if you were dealing in a private business, your office, my office? You'd start cutting expenses. You wouldn't end up with a $500,000 deficit, over $600,000 at the end of the year. And look upon this as some sort of a surprise. The surprise was to us. It shouldn't have been to you. And if it was a surprise to you, then I'm certainly questioning skill here of management. If you knew about this, we should have been so informed so that there could have been some intelligent discussion about an anticipated $600,000 plus deficit prior to the end of the year. That shouldn't happen, as if this is something that took place in the last 2 months and we had no control of this whatsoever. I am extraordinarily disappointed, and what I see here is the failure of management.
Any other discussion? Talking to the expense area, certainly there would have been a reduction in expenses from a standpoint of the Medicare patients, because the Medicare is the high dollar therapy where we have a package or a daily rate that says we're going to provide all these services. Other than those expenses in a nursing home, you have 154 beds or whatever the number is. You still have 154 mouths to feed. You still have a level of basic care that doesn't go away. So I know when we looked at this and we saw those, I mean, the numbers come down, there was also a substantial reduction in those therapy expenses. But I certainly was surprised when I saw the numbers and that we had the deficit, and certainly went back and reported to the county board, you know, that we were solid. Wanted to have this conversation, number one, so we could understand it, but number two, to take a look at 2011 and understand how we are better in this situation if we've had these trending numbers down. I reported earlier in the year, you reported to me and I reported to the board that we were at budget as far as the bottom line goes. So let's, if you could focus a little bit on 2011.
Can I, do you want to walk through this, our department report then? Because Brookside's included in this?
However,
or
you
just go to Brookside?
However you, well, let's Brookside. Hit Brookside, okay. And then we'll do the department.
Okay, because Brookside's included in the other larger packet. If you want to just go to their latest financials, it's on. It starts on page 8, and that's April. I've numbered them on the bottom. So page 8 starts the Brookside financials for April 30th, and that is our latest financial statement.
And this is the financial that you give to the Board of Trustees?
The trustees, yes. They receive this.
And then you will, I think I asked previously if I could get a copy of these so I could at least report to them.
Yes. After the trustees see the report, immediately it gets sent to the court and it will be on all the county board supervisor desks.
Super.
And it has been, I guess. April's already been passed out, which is why I included April tonight, because I was supposed to give a quarterly report for March, but you already had April on your desk, so that's why.
That's Tuesday night.
Okay.
Yeah. So on page 8, it's just a summary, a highlight page and things, but I wanted to talk about the bottom part of the page. And I believe, Supervisor Rose, you had asked me at the last Human Services Committee meeting how much a Medicare patient costs. And so what we did was, and this will be on every front page of the financials from this time on, is calculate that for you. And it'll be recalculated every month. So we started with the year-to-date average per day for our Medicare A and B revenues is $573.05. And I'm on the bottom. Then we took out just the Medicare-related ancillary expenditures, like therapy, like lab, like prescriptions, that type of thing. Okay, so that ran on average $116.93 per day. So then we took, then that gave us a net from our revenue to just Medicare expenses of $456.12. Then I included all the other operational costs outside of particular, specifically Medicare for the facility. So that would be all of the staff costs, all of the maintenance costs, laundry, dietary, all of that. And so it averaged through April $226.53. So if I subtract that off of our additional the net revenue from Medicare, the bottom line is $229.59 per day of every Medicare patient is helping to offset all the other expenditures, like if we're lower in private pay and if we're lower in, or if we're higher in Medicaid patients. So it's helping to offset any kind of decrease in our budgeted census. But the asterisk, I believe, I'm thinking this is what you wanted, Supervisor Rose, is what does it cost, a Medicare resident cost per day? Mm-hmm. So through April, it's $343.46. So then on page 9 is really the summary of revenue and expenditures. The top part in the...
Can I stop you for 1 second?
Oh, sure.
And just going back to the bottom of page 8 in those rates, mm-hmm. we have a Medicare rate. What is that daily?
The Medicare, it's on average, it was 573.
Okay, we have a private pay.
Is 280.
So private pay is 280. Mm-hmm. And Medicaid
rate right now, it's at 143.
So on the Medicaid, we're getting 143, and our daily cost is 226. So we're subsidizing Medicaid.
Yes.
And you said the private was
280.
So there's a smaller margin there, mm-hmm. but it is the Medicare that is really making a contribution in somewhat paying for the Medicaid. Okay.
There's the number 143.
Yeah, 142. So on page 9, then, is just a summary. Our total revenue, it's in the middle of the page, here, total revenue. And through April, we're supposed, our target is 33.3%. The resident revenue, which is the shaded up above, a little bit lighter shaded, is 33.7%. So we are 52,291 over our revenue target. And then... the expenses are broken apart by salary, and we did break apart overtime, and then the benefits, personnel benefits, and the contractual Med A and Med B, that is our Medicare expenses, all our ancillary costs in there, and then we have utilities and supplies, staff development, and all the other categories. So at the end of there's another little small box where it says month-end adjustments, because when we do these financials, we may not get all of our, we do these at the end of May, and so maybe we did not get our lab bill or our Medicare bill, our pharmacy bill or our therapy bill. So what we do is we add some expenditures for that, just so we can get you a better figure for April 30th and the trustees. So that is why we've accrued some Medicare, because at that point we did not have all our bills in, and our utilities. We didn't have our utility bill for the day, so we accrued those. So we have grand total expenses of $4,597,510. So if we take that from our revenue, currently we are running ahead of $225,244. Page 10 is the same amount of expenditures, but broken by department: dietary, laundry, nursing, administration. So it's just broken apart that way. Page 11 shows capital outlay that we have been approved and spent. It shows the Kulik Schneider Trust Fund balance, the Sunshine Fund balance, and the Endowment Fund balance that we report to them. And then our census is at the bottom. And I do have an updated census statistical report through today, June 16th.
So just before, let's look at the census that you have on this report. So on 531.11, are you saying your average daily is 31.4?
Right.
For private pay, and we budgeted 29.9?
And we budgeted...
or we budgeted 38.
We are budgeted 38.
And Medicare, we're up a little bit higher.
Just in May, the month of May.
Where's the average... where are we average year-to-date compared to budget?
Where you see the budget, then you see average current month, and then average year-to-date 2011. It's kind of in the middle. There's three columns that are boxed.
Column three.
It's kind of in the middle.
So we are under in private pay, which provides a small margin.
Mm-hmm.
We are under on Medicare compared to budget, which provides a significant margin. And we're up in Medicaid. And then, and so how can we be so close on our revenues and showing a profit?
If you see our expenditures are not at the target, they're below. Our personnel and our overtime is below, our benefits are below, and even our contractual, all our other, we've been holding the line. Ben has been very good about having them hold the line on all these expenditures. But we are not at those targets for the expenditures. So at the point, we are not spending at the same level as, and we're getting more revenue. We're meeting our revenue target.
So if we're looking back on page 9, you said that we were over budget on revenue by
52,000.
That's year to date?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
So even though we are under on Medicare, we're under on private pay, and we're heavy, how is it that we can be over on our revenue? It seems that's a... The mix that you're showing on that back page does not support a surplus. That's just an observation.
Right, and don't forget we're also getting our SP money in, the supplemental payment in. That was $279,000 added to our revenues.
And is that...
That's the second line under the revenues.
Is that something that's going to be considered to continue... And did we budget for that?
Yes, we budget. It's the former IGT money.
Yeah.
That Brookside has always gotten.
So we, and again, it appears that we are under budget on that line item, a revenue. Is that correct?
Well, through April. But there'll be additional money coming in June.
But we budgeted for that. I'm just...
No, there'll be additional money more than what we had budgeted for. There's like $47,000 more than what we thought we were going to
have. Because?
Sure.
It's just the allocation from the state.
Supervisor Rose.
Is some of that 2011 payments from 2010?
The revenue?
Yeah.
No.
This is all 2011?
Yes. Otherwise, that would be in receivables.
Well, how do you have more revenue? I'm just following up what Joe said. How do you have more revenue and less patients? Unless you substantially increased your daily rate, which you have not.
Our Medicare rate was budgeted at $450, and we're averaging $525 plus.
So is that the answer or not?
And yes. I mean, it's our Medicare daily rate that is way over what we had budgeted. I mean, we're receiving a higher reimbursement rate.
So that's your explanation. When the census is down and it appears the census is off target, that we can have a surplus,
we are
or that we're ahead of budget on revenue.
Didn't.
And then year to date, budget to budget, year to date, you're saying that we are ahead of budget by about $418,000 on expenses. Is that what I'm reading there? It says total expenses before month-end adjustments, $418,000.
Before month-end adjustments, yes.
So we're under, we're ahead of the game on expenses by... Okay.
Well, we're under revenue by 31, right? 12?
Yes.
By 31, right.
Supervisor,
you have moved to receive and file the report.
We second. Have the...
second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Gann, second by Supervisor Singer to move in... receive and file the report. However, that we spoke about Brookside, we didn't talk about the total division,
right.
And that's what you're going to continue with.
Yeah.
Any other discussion on Brookside?
Well, just that I gave you this. Oh.
Yeah.
Just finish. Go over this.
Just that this is the updated census.
As of
today, June 16th, showing that we are increasing our Medicare average, and Medicaid is getting closer to our budget now, and our private pay is growing. So this is as of today. I give you the latest information. Otherwise, I can go through the rest of it.
Okay. Supervisor Rose, did you have any other
questions? Well, just to comment that it's good that in 2011 they cut expenses when the census is down, and I think that's what you should be doing.
Thank you. Continuing on.
Okay. So now I'm back to this page where it has the department with all the positions. And if this format is okay, I probably just put this in there before the city. So Aging and Disability Services, through March 31st, we had about 257,000 estimated savings from year end. If you turn to page 2, it gives you a little bit more detail on their savings and where it's coming from. Our state institutes, both days and our per day costs, are lower through March. So if that, and we are today, I checked with them today, and they're still experiencing the same low volume at the institutes, then we will have a savings of about $730,000. If this is, we're about 600 today. I wanted to adjust that down, so, but this is a quarterly report.
So that's your, that's your annualized projection?
Yes, annualized.
You're trying to annualize where you are?
Yeah. Straight line out.
Okay.
And then outpatient services, yes, we are showing some savings there, $71,000. However, residential has gone up. So our budgeted days through March should have been 3,939 days, and we're slightly over 4,131. And you can see our cost per day actual is over our budget. So we know that there's going to be people moving out in June. There is at least 5 people, 2 I believe are going to family care, and 3 are going to less expensive settings. So that will help us the last half of the year. And then pharmacy services, we are experiencing an increase there. Badger Care is not taking it, or Badger Care Plus for adults, childless adults, are not taking any more applications, and I think we said that during the budget hearing process that we brought up, that was going to be on January 1st. So, and then the Institute, Trumbull County, who is an institute for mental disease, is they won't, they cannot draw down any MA for prescriptions for our residents that are there, so we have to pay the prescription costs. So that's what those costs are being picked up. And then the only other, the rest of the divisions are pretty much breaking even except Children and Family Services, and on your last page, page 12, shows our placements and where we're at. So for 3 months through March, you can see our target is 25%. In the middle of the page down here, you can see what our actual expenditures are for March, and we're at 27%. So our days of care are over, but our per day cost is under. So that's where we're calculating the savings. So right now we're about 17%. So through March, the department's looking at me. I've never sent that through March. I've never had savings of dads for the first quarter.
Get that, Joe?
You brought a tear to my eye.
Any other questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Is this report acceptable?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Thank you. Item 14, it is 7:39, Human Services, resolution to modify the Department of Human Services Division of Children and Family Services 2011 budget for Children's Trust Fund Family Resource Center Network Grant.
Good evening, John Hanson, Department of Human Services.
I'm asking for your approval tonight for the resolution before you, which relates to a grant that Children and Family Services received from the Children's Trust Fund. It's in the amount of $150,000, requiring a $37,500 match. We're not asking for any additional funds to cover that, and it's renewable up to 5 years. What it's designed to do is to increase our family support program services, which are in-home parenting services, to families in need, and also increase resources in our family resource. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to.
So for the youth and governance, Mr. Jansen is the director of human services. That's the job center down there on Sheridan Road. Job center, right? Is that what we call it?
Correct. Yeah.
Supervisor Gans?
I see here that you're taking the 37.5 from out-of-home placements. How is that going to work?
That's based off the projected savings, and this stage just went over the over $700,000 of saving and placement costs.
And you're taking $37,000 of that?
Correct.
Wow. Okay. All right. Thank you. Move to approve the grant.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Gans, second by Supervisor O'Day. Any other discussion? Supervisor Singer.
I think it's a reasonable thing to do. Receive the grant for $150,000. This for 5 years?
Yeah, renewable up 5 years.
That's per year?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Even better now.
Oh, yeah. Now you cover my money. So we'll be matching this 37.5 each year.
Yes.
For the next 5 years. Okay. Just so that you know that, Chairman, because you're always concerned about the budget side of it.
They'll find it within their budget, I'm sure.
And really, these kids, if we didn't do this preventative work, might just end up in the system for an overnight stay somewhere. So $37,000
cost us a lot.
Correct.
A question to John.
Supervisor Dino.
This is the first time this grant came forward?
Yes.
And how long have you worked on it to get the grant? How competitive was it? Really competitive? Or
It was released throughout the state. The Children's Trust Fund folks did come down and interview us about a year ago and were pleased with the services that we're offering, and I think saw this as a possible enhancement to those. And I'm not sure the number of awards that actually went out. I think there was maybe six of them throughout the state.
Was this an in-house person that wrote the grant to
us? Yes, we did this all in-house.
I have to compliment the people that you have doing the grant writing, because it is highly competitive, and overall you're doing a good service anyway, but if you don't write the grants just so, you don't even get a kick at the cat.
Right.
So, thank you.
So, the objective of this grant, if you could just, in a sentence or two, what's it going to accomplish?
It's going to enhance our prevention services, work with families that are on the outskirts of our child abuse and neglect system, so they may have been referred, but nothing was found to have been abused or neglected, but they still need help. So in an effort to keep services into those families, and keep them out of our system so they don't end up in the places that Lori was talking about. That's what the whole goal and purpose is. So the prevention of child abuse and neglect.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. We addressed, item number 15 of this?
One is the county clerk. The county clerk.
Why do I keep grabbing this old agenda?
You have the hand agenda.
I threw
it
wrong.
Okay, so we're on
the county clerk.
Okay, 15. It is 7:43, item number 15, county clerk. Resolution to transfer $50,000 from the general fund for recall elections.
Motion approved.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor O'Day, seconded by Supervisor Singer.
For you did.
Holy cow. Any discussion? My only question is, to Dave, is the, you feel the amount is appropriate, excessive, the correct amount?
I think the amount's a good number. Any unspent amount will lapse back to the general fund, and we put some things in place to reduce costs. We're doing a little more of the election in-house now through our IT, working with the county clerk, so hopefully we can reduce the cost as much as possible, but when we saw what was happening, we wanted to get this in front of the county board so that you had a chance to review and act on it before elections occurred. So.
Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. Chairman Molinaro.
I didn't hear the question was asked. Can we say that's, this is, what are they basing the number on? 50,000? We've got two elections.
Yeah.
We're certain that's going to cover it.
I remember walking through the detail. We had an analysis in our department. One of the accountants went through it. Al, can you talk about some of the detail that we spend money on? I mean, we have to pay a company to develop ballots. I'm good with the number.
We worked out with the clerk on that number, so we feel fairly comfortable.
Okay, we previously addressed item 16. We're on to item 17. Is 7:45 from personnel, review and approval of a policy regarding employee benefit enhancements. Mr. Riedel.
The process of developing this policy actually started with previous administration committee probably 9 months ago or so. There's a response by the county to the large number of opportunities that are given through vendors to our employees. Specifically, you may be familiar with Aflac. Aflac is a program that we can offer to our employees. Mr. Nolan is here. Mr. Nolan represents Boston Mutual Insurance Company, and he offers an enhancement to life insurance, which could be offered to our employees. And the fact is that we get probably a dozen or more of these every year. And so we felt it was time to propose and work on a fair policy and procedure to accept opportunities on behalf of our employees, analyze them to see if they are appropriate, beneficial to the county as an employer, to the employees, and then categorize them so that the vendor does have an opportunity to present the product to our employees in one of two categories, which we have labeled Tier 1 and Tier 2. On a very general explanation level, Tier 1 benefits are benefits that have been identified to have an advantage to Kenosha County or to be a benefit to our employees, only attainable or maybe enhanced by allowing them to be pre-tax. Tier 2 benefits in general are excellent benefits, great opportunities for our employees, but do not require or should not require the involvement of the county administration, specifically payroll, in order to present them to our employees. In both cases, the vendors would be welcome to approach our employees, use our rooms, and have the employees available to them during non-work hours, including lunch, so that they could have an opportunity to present their product and determine if it's appropriate for the individual employee and his or her family. Interestingly enough, this resurfaced, and the interest in some of these products has resurfaced in light of Act 10, also known as the Budget Repair Bill, through that some employees have approached us to see if there would be enhanced benefits offered because it is presumed that some of the benefits will be reduced once the budget is passed or once the Act 10 goes into effect. Those decisions have yet to be made yet, though I would hasten to point out
So that is what is the, that's how this came about. It has been written in cooperation with the finance division and acknowledging the amount of work that they would have to do under certain circumstances. With the new county board structure and the new committee structure, I realize this is your first real opportunity at it. But once again, we present it to you for your review and your approval. And just for clarification, the Corporation Council will give the numbers and fill in where the X's are once they're approved. So this is a draft.
Who is on the administration committee? Any comments or what you guys did in the past?
Well, this is, the most recent version of this as it was developed along the way. And, I think we were headed in the direction of approving the final product. So we gave it the current committee.
So you say tier one, it says a county-sponsored benefit. What does it mean to be county-sponsored?
Our health insurance, or life insurance associated to the WRS.
County pays it.
Tier ones are county-provided benefits. In the 125 account, which is, you know, pre-tax opportunity to pay for medical, 457. Investments. So they're categorized as benefits offered to our employees as the course of employment and benefits that have a tax advantage and as such have to be administered through payroll or finance.
It's my understanding that there's two different parties, interested parties in this room. One of them would be Aflac, and the other one would be, is it Mass Mutual or
Boston
Mutual?
Right. Terry Nolan, you've already met, and for the purpose of introduction, Chris Logsleff is the representative from Aflac.
Okay. So how would each one of those different providers, where would they fall into the tier process and why?
Mr. Nolan's would fall into Tier 2, and the reason is that there is no tax advantage or any reason for the county to administer the program for them. It's our position that he's got an excellent product. There's no question about it. It's WCA endorsed, as he's pointed out, and it's a good product. However, you can't take on too many products where we have to do the administration of the same product. As proposed, Boston Mutual product would have to carry with it a deduction from the employee check and then a transfer of those funds to the provider of the product, which I presume is Boston Mutual. It's our hope that with modern day technology and many of us paying our bills online and having fund transfer be the method of exchange, that established, or that could be established between the customer and the provider of the service. So much like I pay my insurance bill through an automatic withdrawal to, pardon me, Allstate, they can hopefully set it the same. I don't exactly know where Aflac would fall because they have a variety of products, some of which could be a tax advantage to Kenosha County. We have not gone in depth with Ms. Logsleff yet on what product would best suit Kenosha County, should they come forward and offer their product to us, and whether or not there's an advantage to Kenosha County to, again, administer pre-tax withdrawal. But we will do that once we've established the policy. And she and I and Dave will get into it much more.
So to distinguish between a Tier 1 and a Tier 2, as it relates to outside providers, and we have many outside providers that are wanting access to the Kenosha County employees.
Yes.
And this policy is to help direct how the administration, who to let in, who not to let in, or how to classify them. It's my understanding that you would classify somebody as a Tier 1 if you could identify a benefit, a financial benefit to Kenosha County, versus not identify a financial benefit. And a financial benefit may be a pre-tax deduction that would have savings on the FICA and Medicare. Is that what you're...
Yes.
Okay. And when you get to the point that you're evaluating a Tier 1 or a Tier 2, you're trying to consider the cost of the county employees that have to administer and payroll these various different deductions and these changes. Is that the concern of the administration?
Yes.
So in order to classify somebody as Tier 1, the determination by the administration, your department, is that this benefit exceeds the cost to the county. Is that a fair?
That is a fair assessment.
Okay. So, I previously, I previously shared with you in a conversation a proposed amendment, and I'm going to read this so you can at least respond to it. And I want to be very clear what the administration would recommend or not recommend based on this and why. In keeping with the aforementioned fiscal responsibility and in light of the payment of the annual dues to NACO and the WCA for their expertise, experience, and due diligence with respect to county employee benefits, such as Section 457 investment funds and the employee life option, all National Association of County and Wisconsin County Association endorsed programs and products shall be exempt from Tier 1 or Tier 2 category qualifications. How do you receive that, and what's your response to that?
If I interpret your amendment correctly,
this was
very simple terms. It means if it is WCA endorsed or NACO endorsed, it becomes available to Kenosha County.
And that this policy would, and this policy would say that, and this is not my amendment. I had conversations with Mr. Nolan, and I'm just bringing this forward for discussion, as I said I would. So that amendment really says there's not a Tier 1 or a Tier 2. If it's by Wisconsin County or NACO and they're approved, Kenosha County must do it. And we don't know, we must do it without any evaluation of cost, benefit, or administration. And I don't even know how many providers are on that list.
I don't either. And again, the attempt, and certainly we are open to amendments, change, things that will accomplish what our intent is. But our intent is to not overburden county resources, specifically the payroll department and the areas of finance that have to actually take action to withdraw money and do so on a biweekly basis or with some other function. To the extent that everyone who is NACO endorsed can come in, I don't know what's NACO endorsed. I don't know what standards they use. I don't know if NACO is endorsing benefits which are implicit, something laid side by side with something we offer our employees. The WRS at times will object to us offering products, benefits that are parallel to what we can get through them. We've had that occasion. Again, I would have to look more closely at what a WCA and NACO endorsement involve, and what products are endorsed by them before I would give them a free pass on to the county employees. I don't want to deny our employees anything which would be useful to them, particularly now that we're getting into some difficult times, which is why we established this kind of structure where nearly anyone can approach you with a product. But it doesn't have to be county administered or incur county overhead costs.
So tier one benefit, the county would make a decision, there's a cost benefit, and we should administer it through a payroll deduction. Tier two, the county determines that there's not a financial benefit. The cost benefit to the county isn't there. However, any provider can come in and request of the county the use of a conference room or the ability to meet with our employees, provide them the opportunity to make that presentation. The only difference is then that they would have to do a direct payment with the employee as opposed to getting the county involved in a payroll deduction.
Yes, you'll see under category qualification, under tier two benefits, there are statements listed A through F, which we would seek to have be qualifiers to approach. Mostly it's assuring that it's a real product provided by a good company, it provides a benefit, a recognizable benefit to the county.
So as the question we talked about, Boston Mutual,
yes,
or whatever they're called, based on your understanding and conversations with Mr. Nolan in the past or presentations, you would say that they would be a tier two, and they would have access to county employees. The only difference would be whether it's a payroll deduction administered by the county or whether they made a ACH payment directly with the employee.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Super.
Looking at the tier two, it seems to be somewhat less direct involved than tier one. Tier one seems to be very clear and concise. But tier two, I just have a little bit of a difficult time understanding it. When you read tier two, it says county-sponsored benefit, which is managed by the vendor, providing a benefit at no cost to Ocean County. So really, what you're saying here is a relationship in between the vendor and the Kenosha County employees without direct involvement of Kenosha County administration per se.
Minimal involvement.
Yeah.
Not administrative involvement. I define administrative involvement as being the deductor of the premium, and then the sender of that premium to wherever it goes. By whatever means, then we are an administrative agent for the
vendor. But not a fiduciary or financial institution. It's still administrative. So
sure, we will make sure that it's an appropriate benefit for our employees. We'll provide a room for them to meet with our employees.
Well, my concern, Mr. Chairman, would be in a situation like this that we would not reduce any culpability on the county's liability side of the balance sheet should one of these relationships go south. I mean, everyone has the best intentions when we start out. We say this is a good relationship. Vendor ABC always good paper. For some reason, there's a mishap, there's malfeasance over long term. I would want to have some type of paperwork or documentation basically accusing, is that the correct term there, accusing Kenosha County of any financial liability or damage, liability. I would want to make sure that was included. I see in the first case where that's really eminently attainable. In the second case, I don't see what I'm looking at here as that spelled out, so you're appropriate.
That involves a direct relationship between the vendor and the employee.
So what's the pleasure of the committee as far as acting on this draft and making this policy, considering the amendment or proposed change that I read? What does the committee choose to do tonight? Supervisor Singer.
As far as what you had read, that opens the door and causes a lot of problems. I don't necessarily agree with that. As far as Tier 1, Tier 2, and these are employee benefits. How do you put a definition on what are employee benefits? Could the credit card companies coming in and meeting with people and giving them T-shirts and all this crap? I mean, and are we going to be providing hourly rooms during working hours when we're paying people to work and they're in here talking to vendors? I mean, how do we limit this so that it doesn't get out of hand?
They got to get on really cool t-shirts. The answer to your question, Supervisor Singer, is it is specific in the policy that they can't approach our employees during our employees' personal time. So we'll set up a room at 5 o'clock. Most of our buildings are public buildings, and particularly the county center can be used by groups. Certainly, the county wants to have its employees have an opportunity to meet with someone who is vending a good product. Certainly, we would make that happen. But in terms of using county time to do that, I would not enforce it. It would happen from 7 to 8, or it would happen from noon to 1, or happen from 5. So long as you're up, if you work at the highway division, it could happen at 3:30, whatever. So that's the first thing. The second thing is hopefully that A through F list will help us determine who is and who isn't appropriate. And I'll be honest enough with you, the fact that I've been approached by three local banks in the past 4 months to offer savings and checking accounts, or whatever they are now, electronic fund transfers, to our employees, and every one of those banks would put a couple $100 in the savings account. So we have to decide if that's appropriate for us or not, and that would be the judgment that my office would take.
Yeah. Chairman Molinaro.
I got a couple questions, but I'm going to go to your last point here. So, your office is going to make a judgment as to whether or not we should allow banks to come in and solicit their services to our employees?
Well, currently, obviously, we all select our own bank.
And that is the end of the discussion to me right there. Kenosha County, just like I would say of any other employer should stay out of the solicitor. What's next? Dry cleaner? I use Martino's. I think they do a great job, generally speaking. Do we let the dry cleaners come in? And the last thing I want to do, and this isn't a directive, but I don't want to limit that to one individual or group of individuals who are going to make the decision on what companies are. Doc Grady, as long as he's on the county board, we can't do it, but once he's done, I guess we're going to let him come in and schlep his glasses here.
Not a good idea.
Don't drink that, Joe. Wow.
Reservation about what we're talking about in general. I am absolutely 100% opposed to what you just stated. Mm.
With the bank situation.
And anything even remotely similar.
The bank came in and said, if you switch to my bank, I'll put $200.80.
Let him say it to him on the outside. We're not going to provide, this is my personal opinion, we're not going to provide.
TCF puts on it.
Because, and I'm for the employees in the room, I see we have several here. I'm talking specifically about, where does it begin, where does it end for the employee? I don't want to have Kenosha County be known as a, we've converted to 1,100 employees, and we're just letting the farmers come in and bid on it sounds absolutely crazy to me that we're even talking about this. Maybe I'm alone in this. Sounds crazy to me.
Well, in part, we're very attractive to organizations that have a product to sell, and most of the products that we're approached with are fairly good products.
No question.
But before the county offers through its own processes, through its own reimbursements, and its own, as a county benefit, okay, like our health insurance, like our life insurance. Before we do that, the question is should these people have an opportunity to vend their products? And that's why we're here, actually, is to get your input, see where the board wants to go with this policy, so that it is structured the way they want.
Okay, and
I'm not an advocate for, you know, one bank over another.
We can talk about benefits, and that's what I intended to talk about until you mentioned the banks. Banking, where you do your banking, where you do your grocery shopping, where you fill up with gas, that is not a county or any employer that I'm aware of benefit or part of any benefit plan. Next thing you know, we're going to have Aflac or Boston Mutual partnering up with Johnson Bank or Southport Bank and coming in and offer a package deal.
Could easily happen.
I'm fundamentally opposed
Great
to
that. Great America comes here every year and offers us 25% off.
A coupon sitting in the lunchroom is very different than Johnson Bank coming in on Monday, Southport on Tuesday, and M&I on Wednesday. Very different. Fundamentally opposed to that. Now, back to the issue of benefits. Are we looking to allow, so this is a plan or a concept that would allow our employees then to opt out of our health insurance, right?
No.
It wouldn't keep them from opting out of our health insurance either. That's completely separate.
So this is all supplemental?
Yes.
Okay. Supervisor Day?
There's just a sentence in here where benefits may include. You could eliminate the sentence. You could.
Where are you at?
This is just a draft. Tier 2 benefits in the second paragraph, where it does state about the discounted banking, gym membership. I don't know how many gyms are in Kenosha, but retail discount programs. They can advertise to their own customers or to everybody in Kenosha.
We do get deals on gym membership.
Yeah.
And Sam's Club.
The benefits constitute a sponsorship by the county to provide.
It's a common thing that happens with all employers.
They don't want to get in the sponsorship business because then it looks like somebody's buying off the county to get some business.
That's exactly right. It's a slippery slope.
I'll grease the county somewhere $10,000 if I can get some business somewhere else. So you're going to get into a tough area.
Supervisor Atkins.
This started, I can't remember how long it was, been some time ago when a presentation was made to the administration committee for one of these products. I think it might have been Boston Mutual in this case. And it was decided that before we consider anybody doing this, there should be a policy in place that needed to be followed in considering any of these products. And this is... this is yet another part of the evolution of that policy. That's if you want to allow anyone to come in with any product at all, there should be a policy in place that you would use to evaluate prior to approving them to come in to the and pitch it to the employees. There should be a whole harmless here that the county neither endorses nor encourages an employee partaking in any of these products so that it can't come back on us that, hey, you know, we took this because it was implied that you said it was a good deal and it isn't working out for me the way I would like. That's kind of the history of how this evolved to where we're at tonight.
Who approves these vendors? Would that be you?
That would be up to the policy maker. Could be me. They might have come before the committee.
I don't know that we want to have the county board, in my opinion, getting into that level. I wouldn't mind seeing in this policy that I mean, it can be left up to a division head or whomever, but I want to see the county executive sign off on it. Because as Chairman Molinaro has concerns about a slippery slope, the buck stops with the county executive as it relates to the administration. So two things that have come out of this, I would, again, there's who approves what's coming. And secondly, there was a somewhat of a hold harmless for the county. Any other discussions or thoughts on this? Chairman Molinaro?
Has this been an issue that's come up in the employee ranks, requesting this opportunity to have various vendors come in and pitch their wares? And I don't mean heard it from 3, 4, or 5 people. I mean, is this truly something that the employee, by and large? No. So why are you asking then the county board or this committee to draft the policy on opening the door to something that we don't know that the employees even have an interest in? And if I went to my employees and said, you know, I'm gonna give you or allow anyone who wants to come in and pitch their what they sell to you, and we're gonna do it every Friday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I get everyone to raise their hand and say, yeah, that's a great idea. We think you ought to do it. If I ask them the same question and tell them it's gonna be on Fridays at 5 o'clock, there isn't a one who's gonna say anything other than I can find all that information out on my own if I'm interested. Outside of work. So, if just on the surface we don't have this demand for this knowledge to be brought and handed to us, or the sales to be brought and handed to us, and on top of it you're going to say it'll happen after hours, or one day a month or something, I just can't. I need to know that we're creating a policy, not simply to be creating a policy. And we're creating a policy to address something that our employees in large numbers want to have us do.
May I respond?
Sure.
The answer to your first question is less than a response to county employees. It's more of a response to business people in the community who believe they have good products to sell and look for employee groups to sell. A number of good products out there sold by Kenosians who are out trying to earn their living by selling products to groups like ours. Question is, should we give them an opportunity to convince our employee group that their product is good for them? And if a select number of employees, we have 1,000, say 100, decided, you know, I really could use that particular product, I don't identify. And they could have a direct relationship that didn't involve the county for 100 people, which seems kind of small to put the resources. I keep calling it Dave, but it's finance that do most of the work. Then do we owe these people that opportunity as salespeople in a controlled environment, which is endorsed by the policymaking group of the county, which is you? Do we owe them that responsibility? A few months ago, maybe more than a few months ago now, when we started this process, we thought that this might be the best approach to handle. Because Dave gets several a year opportunities from good people with good products who want to sell their products to the commission. That's really my response.
And I appreciate the response. It, you know, certainly gives me a reason to give a little bit more consideration to a potential. I still believe that once you begin to open this up, to be fair, and keep in mind Kenosha County, once you start talking about Kenosha County, fairness is what it's all about. You will have, this will open up the floodgates we'll have employees saying, well, if you're going to let such and such come in, I really have an interest here, I'd like to see so-and-so come in, or this other group, or that other group, this other type of business, et cetera. I recognize they're all good businesses, but it isn't a question of whether or not it's good businesses or not. I don't like the NACO and WCA either, by the way, because from time to time we disagree with them as well. It should be a decision that we make here internally, not something that we just say if someone else vetted and we're okay with it. That's a little bit of a sign for the back boys. So, and you will begin to, I just think you open up a potential here for nothing but an accusation that it wasn't fair, you didn't give someone else a shot, Supervisor Rose could have done a better job, defending whatever, so he ought to be. I just think you're opening ourselves up for criticism that we'll be coming back to try to address this thing down the road. I don't see the real value to it. I don't see the real need to it.
Okay. I think that certainly you have several requests that come. I think we're at least setting up parameters. I think it's something that we should look at. I don't think it's opening up a can of worms here. You're already getting those requests, and it's leaving it to the administration to evaluate, and ultimately the county executive to approve. If we include that language, I guess if there are any other changes or comments or thoughts, I would entertain a motion to defer this until our next meeting and have it come back with the changes that we've discussed.
I'll move that.
It's been moved by Supervisor Singer, seconded by Supervisor Eckernes. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Let the record show I abstained.
The record will reflect that Supervisor Gantz has abstained and not participated in the debate. Okay. It's here,
Simon. I'm really affected.
I am just like someone can't hear. Okay. Okay. We are on item 18. It is now 8:21. Finance discussion of a possible resolution on county budget advisory levy objective. Budget Director Al Swartz will make a presentation.
Everybody have a copy that wants a copy?
The first page here.
Just before we get into this, for the benefit of youth and governance, several years back we adopted a resolution or a policy where the county board takes a look at upfront prior to the county executive preparing the budget, a levy cap. Here's where we want to see the levy come in. We don't want to see it come in any higher than this. It is advisory, the county executive, it's his budget. He could propose what he wishes to propose. However, the county board takes this resolution seriously, and we have shown in the past that we will follow this resolution and bring our budget in at that number. It has consistently happened that way in the past. So we're right now trying to take a look at that and establish that up front. There are a lot of unknowns this year, more so than other years, because we have the state budget that is, it may be at least, that has been approved by the assembly. It went to the Senate. It may be finalized here where the governor's going to sign it. But there's a lot of information to digest in that budget and understand how it impacts Kenosha County. So that's where we are at this point in Al will, he is the budget director for Kenosha County.
Thank you. Okay, the first page tries to reflect the impact of the state budget. It shows the state budget runs from July to June each year, so some of the impacts are in 2011. The main area I want to focus on is the 2012 deliveries, where you want to set the advisory levy for 2012 budget. The first item is we're looking at a reduction of a quarter of our state shared revenue of about $466,000. The next number represents the WRS savings that the county would get from contributions to the pension. The income maintenance I think we've had a lot of discussion about the income maintenance, but it's no reduction in staff or any of the wraparound services. So at this point, we're still working with the state. That's still a real fluid number, but that is a worst case scenario. Youth aid, family care, gateway lease are pretty solid numbers at this particular point. We still have family care impact and any service reduction, fee reduction impact. Those are really unknown, and until we get into providing those services and see what the impact, there's more language changes that will have financial implications, not a number of the budget that said they're going to cut us by 5 or 10%. I'm not going to go through most of the smaller numbers in the health department. I'll take you down to the highway. General transportation aids are reduced by $200,000. And then there's some minor 10% reductions in law enforcement and DAs, like the witness program and the child support, the court support grant and the GAL grant. The next page.
Did you discuss the income maintenance, or did I miss that?
Next page shows the levy at $2.3 million. That was in the 2012. We're also assuming that we're going to need $1 million just for ongoing health insurance, utilities, gas, and miscellaneous expenses. So we're going to need another $3,820,000. A 3% levy we'll need to reduce the budget by $1.6 million in order to have a 3% levy. And that 3% levy will increase the levy by $1.7 million. So I guess I'll direct you right down to the bottom. $650,000 for operations and $1,057,000 for increase in debt service. So the total, if you approved a 3% increase, it would increase the levy by $1.7 million and 3%. I'll take you to the next page.
Mr. Chairman, can you have a question before we move on?
Sure.
Just so that I clearly understand here. I see where you have the $1.6 million here. That's the decrease as a result of the budget.
The 1.6 is how much we would have to reduce that $3 million down to have a 3% levy.
All right. Are you, on this page too, are you funding then this $2,320,000? Oh, you are?
Yes.
With local dollars?
The top part is saying we have to fund $2,300,000 of our deficit from the state, our projected levy increase from the state. $1 million of additional normal increases for health insurance, gas, and utilities. So we have a $3 million goal. Okay.
But why would we pick up, assuming the state cuts you by this amount of money, $2,320,000? Why would we pick that up locally?
That's a decision you can make. These wraparound services, worst case scenario.
Well, I understand, and that's a policy decision. That's I think we need to make as a county board, but in reviewing this, I don't think that we ought to be just assuming, going on to page 3, that we are going to be funding something that they're cutting at the state level. If this is a state-funded service and it's being cut, then I think we need to analyze here at the local level, is this something that we are going to pick up? Is that our assumption? That every time the state government cuts locally, we're going to pick that up? Every time federal government picks cuts, we're going to pick that up? That's not my assumption.
No.
My assumption is they cut $2,300,000+. We're not going to pick that up. I think that's an unfair burden on the Kenosha taxpayer here. If that's what page 2 is saying, that's the way I read it, correct?
No.
Well, that's what he said.
I could comment on it. No, we're, by board policy, we would look at each program on a case-by-case basis and make smart choices on what we would do. Many of these programs, you would find that the return on investment and the long-term impact on us financially would exceed the cost of cutting it. So it would, there would be a return on investment, a financial return on investment, if we maintain the program. So we'll be smart about how we do it. You're not carte blanche stating by adopting this advisory resolution that we're going to fund every program, every grant program that's funded, or every intergovernmental aid that's cut. In fact, by budget policy, you have language in your budget resolution that says the opposite, so that's your declared policy. Really, this is just to give you, put some analysis in front of you so you can see where we really are from a holistic, big-picture standpoint. And I think you can see on this page that it looks to us like we can maintain the same level of levy change and still maintain our programs with some challenge. We would have to make some adjustments. Again, we would look at each item that we would do on a case-by-case basis and be smart about what we do. However, we're not adopting the budget here. Determining are we going to backfill an intergovernmental aid with levy, that's the budget process, and when we get into that, we can do the heavy lifting on that item.
Thank you. Supervisor Rose.
Well, I don't think you're really contradicting what I'm saying. I think that we're still funding, under this analysis, what they're cutting. And you're saying that, well, that is true, and if we cut that, that'll cause some other things to occur, and that may be true as well. But I think that we have got to have a policy debate on whether or not we are going to be funding what they're cutting. And that doesn't need to be occurring at 8:35 on this June night, but it needs to occur.
I'm going to, are you done, Supervisor? Yes. Supervisor Gantz, I want to try to get the supervisors their comments or questions here.
Yeah, thank you. Last year I voted against this, and I'm not going to support doing anything with this right now. Okay. While I trust you to make all the appropriate maneuvers financially, I trust you guys explicitly, but there's too many unknowns out there. And to say that, you know, and I recall what happened last year. We had to stick to a certain number. So don't tell me that there's a lot of play later. Okay, because last year there wasn't. We have to hit this number. Everybody has to get, okay, if you're going to do it that way, I don't even know how you can think about doing that now with so much up in the air from the state level. There's just no way I think you can put a number in that hole and then stick to it. So I'm not really ready to make that recommendation right now. That's my comment.
I came in here, I met with Dave and Al yesterday, spent a considerable amount of time trying to wrap my arms around this $2.5 million of this medical or income maintenance wraparound, whether we were going to lose that, whether we were or weren't. It's really that's a large number. And right, you know, the conversation yesterday was, well, it's a 50-50. Well, my thought was, I agree with you. There's a lot of unknowns there. And at the end of this evening, I was going to suggest that we table this or defer this until the next meeting. We, within our policy, we have the ability to do that.
Yes.
I think we need to understand
the state budget, but tonight we get a flavor of where the administration at least thinks as to where we are now. And as I said at the previous county board meetings that we were going to be, this issue was going to be coming up, as we look to say we should be at a freeze, we should be at whatever percent, I'm looking to hear from this finance and administration committee or the county board, what thoughts do you have to get us there? We've got $1 million lift on debt for sure, but I'm hoping that we come out of here not only with a number, but some specific recommendations. So with that, Supervisor Gentz, are you done?
Sure.
Supervisor Singer.
I agree with Supervisor Gentz. I think it's still too early, and we can refer this to our next meeting, and that's what I would suggest. My question was to Al, is that I thought in the budget that the state was going to limit us to a 0% levy. Is that true or not?
That's not true, because, and I'll get to the next page, that is not included in that. But I just want to make a comment. We're trying to bring the information on where we are and what kind of pull we have relative to the state budget. We're not trying to do a budget at this particular point. We're trying to give you the information so that you can set your policy on your advisory levy objective, I guess.
To have the best information available to make an educated decision.
Correct.
That's why I agree with Supervisor Gentz. We don't have enough information yet to do that. Once we do get all that information, then I think we can go forward, and I think we got plenty of time to do that stuff.
So. Supervisor O'Day.
Just to clarify, you sat down with them yesterday, and you just basically arbitrarily came up with a, put this together on paper at a 3%.
No.
At all.
I did that. I did that just for the purposes of illustration.
Okay, for illustration purposes.
You know, I'm not recommending any particular number. I'm just trying to illustrate it right here, to illustrate here what the impact would be at 3%. Okay, and what the impacts of the state budget are, and what the other increases or decreases we think we have at this particular point.
Yeah. What I hope to get tonight or in yesterday was, number one, an understanding of what the state budget is going to allow as a maximum levy increase, number one, and number two, what are those built-in cost increases, or what are we assuming? Utilities are going up, fuel is going up, health insurance is going up. What's the impact of the state budget? Mm-hmm. So we could at least understand that whole, or in the impact, and that's exactly what the administration is presenting here tonight. There's no recommendation as to what a levy should come in at. It's just going to educate this committee as to where we are, what the maximum is, and anything that is shown here as far as a levy or what that hold is for illustrative purposes only, and there's no endorsement by anybody to a number. Supervisor O'Day, you done?
Yeah.
Supervisor Gaines.
Through the chair to Dave and Al, are we going to have an analysis of the budget by our next meeting?
That first page more or less analyzes the budget as we know it today.
As we know it today, right. Which is not even done.
Right.
So, I mean, let's say they pass it in 2 weeks, in a week, or whatever, tomorrow.
I don't think it'll change much from what we have here.
So in July, it's unlikely there will be a lot of change here.
But will we have seen the state budget and been able to analyze it in that amount of time?
They're good.
I know they're good, and I you know, but I also don't want to make a motion to defer this for a month if we're not going to be ready in a month. Because I appreciate the numbers they put down on paper, but I don't think we're even near ready to even look at it.
There's a pretty big metric in here, the IM. That's probably the one that we will not know in July. And I don't think we'll have an answer to that one in July.
Okay, I'm done.
Supervisor Rose.
I would move that we table this discussion until the next meeting.
Second.
Okay, before we do that, I would like to finish the presentation, at least as to how they determine, because I came into this thinking, like Supervisor Singer, we're at a freeze except for new growth. And I want you to understand that before we get done. So if you would at least allow, before we act on that, or I just withdraw your tabling and allow...
We'll just go to the preliminary state levy calculation. And we have not seen the forms from the Department of Revenue. We know that that is not excluded, and this was the calculation that was done in previous years, and we're assuming that it's going to be the same calculation, where you take the prior year levy, you subtract out your post 2005 levy, come down to a levy, and then we do the calculation for new construction, and we only have 0.25% of new construction, so it's a higher than two here. Okay, if you back that out, and then it's the post 2000 levy is added back in for the increase in the post 2000. So you back out your post and add in your post for the increase, and that's really the increase here. And how we, as we know it today, we can increase the levy 2.2 1 million, almost 2.2 or 3.85%.
Any discussion as far as that, or any questions relative to that levy limit calculation? Okay.
I just want to say, as we go forward, we're more limited with the state budget. And we definitely want to have the flexibility as long as high as we can for sustainability of our budget going forward. I just want to make sure that everybody understands that.
Supervisor Grady.
I just want to state it in some sense, I can't bring about two sentences here. What's on page 3, 3.85%? What's on page 2, 3%? Can you just put that into 2 or 3 sentence summary so I can find that?
For illustration purposes, I did not use the maximum we could. I used the 3% because that's what we have been in the past, just for illustration purposes. That would allow us to go up to 3.85% for the illustration on that page.
Oh, so that's an illustration possibly indicative of Kelly's financial situation. We're on page 3. This would be legislatively mandated by the
no, it's not legislative, it's a maximum.
That's all I
want. Okay, so if there is no objection, we're going to defer this until our next meeting and have this on our agenda with plans of adopting in July and bringing a resolution to the board at the second July meeting. Okay. It was moved by Supervisor
Rose,
seconded by Supervisor Akronis.
Right.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
It was zero.
Okay. I'm just going to ask that when somebody has the floor that we are focused and there be no side discussions. We are on item 19, report from the finance director, budget manager, and personnel director. Just for the record, I get my phone, it is 8:42.
We've got a public works report, and then we already went through the human services report, so I think Al can walk you through the public works report.
Before I start out, I want to introduce Mike Kessel. I should have done this earlier in the meeting. Mike is an intern working with the county. He's working with me. He's working in other departments in the county, and he is a college student. I'll let Mike talk about himself real quick, but he's interested in public administration.
I'm a senior at Whitewater from 8th degree in public administration. I'll be graduating in December and hoping to just go into some kind of political or legislative job in the future.
Sorry, I didn't introduce you.
It's all right.
Are you from Kenosha?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's a public works report in your budget, DPW operation and revenue expense report. I think the only comment I'm going to make is Public Works overall will at this particular point balance. Golf is running the same deficit as last year at this particular point. We have the revenues are down, expenses are also down, and that's what's kept it at the same level. It's not like revenues are down and they haven't adjusted to reduce expenses down also. We have a new fiscal manager out at Public Works. We are working with the golf director, monitoring and weekly on how they can reduce expenses and how they're doing relative to the budget. So even though revenues is bad, a bad spring, and everybody talks about weather, they've also been able to reduce their expenses almost by an equal amount. And that's the only reason they're at the same level as last year at this particular. I think we're, you know, if we can continue to monitor, continuing to give them the financial tools that we're hoping that we can cut the deficit a little bit this year from what it was last year. But we'll be able to give you guys monthly reports on where they are and what the status of the golf is, not at the end of the year after the season's over, but on a monthly basis.
So your projection for Department of Public Works at this point in time is a surplus, a break even?
They'll break even overall. We'll have savings within, you know, parks and facilities and the highway to cover any deficit.
And it appears that our deficit in golf is ahead of last year, though.
It's about not the same as last year.
Mm. So when you look at that section down below there, operations levy surplus, does that... In the actual, does that mean 205,000?
If you look at 205 actual versus 177 last year.
Okay, so we're about, compared to last year, we're about 28,000
right.
Worse off.
Worse off here. But there's some one-time expenses that are in there that result in that.
Any other questions? Continuing on.
I think the rest of these reports, Al, unless we should comment, they could just be received and filed. If you have any questions about any of them, you could discuss them or at a later time after you've reviewed them.
So we'll have a motion to receive and file the reports.
So moved.
By Supervisor Rose, second by Supervisor Eckernes. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
And then we've got the audit, which I can distribute.
The audit of the bills, hopefully we had an opportunity to review the green sheets. We'll sign this and pass it around.
Chairman, I move we take a brief recess.
We will take a, we'll take a 5-9. We will
left on the agenda.
Start. We got to go into closed session. So
that's it.
That's it.
Why are we going
for the grievances?
So we will take a 7-minute recess.
7 minutes.
Yes.
Good question. I was kind of surprised with that number.